Herzlich willkommen, liebe Beachvolleyball-Welt, zu dieser Folge Maximum Beachvolleyball. Heute haben wir einen besonderen Gast dabei, denn er ist dreimaliger Olympionik, er ist vierfacher Vize-Europameister, er ist Europameister, er ist mehrfacher World Tour Champion und sein Name, ihr kennt ihn alle, ist Alexander Samoilovs, der Lion King. Er hat wirklich sehr viel Interessantes zu erzählen über seine ganze Karriere, seine vielen Studiengänge und vieles mehr. Ich wünsche euch also ganz viel Spaß mit dieser Episode. Bevor die Folge aber losgeht, ein kleiner Hinweis auf eure Möglichkeiten, diesen Podcast zu unterstützen. Das Einfachste, was wirklich jeder machen kann, ist liked bei Instagram, followed bei Instagram. Immer wenn ihr Posts von mir seht, einfach einmal drunter kommentieren. Das Ganze ist gut für den Algorithmus und vielleicht entstehen dabei auch spannende Diskussionen. Also das kann wirklich jeder mitmachen auf den sozialen Kanälen. Einfach interagieren und da teilhaben. Dazu gibt es mittlerweile die Möglichkeit, bei Patreon ein Mitglied zu werden. Für nur 3 Euro im Monat bekommt ihr da exklusive Insights aus den Podcasts, Hintergrundinformationen, Hintergrundvideos und zum Beispiel auch die kompletten Video-Episoden von diesem Podcast. Also auf Patreon ganz einfach zu unterstützen. An dieser Stelle auch direkt der versprochene Shoutout an Susi, an Daniel und an Andreas, die schon Patreon-Mitglieder geworden sind. Wem eine Mitgliedschaft zu viel ist, wer vielleicht gar keine Hintergrundinformationen bekommen möchte, kann auch ganz einfach bei PayPal unterstützen. Den Link zu all diesen Dingen findet ihr in den Shownotes. In diesem Sinne wünsche ich euch ganz viel Spaß mit der Episode. Well, good morning and welcome, Alexander Samoilovs. How are you?
Hello, I'm good. Thank you.
Maybe tell us for the start, like, where are you? What are you doing right now?
Yeah, actually, I'm on my way to Philippines to play Pro Tour Challenger in Nuvali. And currently, I'm in my connection flight in Dubai. So you caught me in Dubai when I'm at my friend's place. And I have flight in 6 hours. I have flight to Philippines, but after this interview, I will go to the beach, practice. And then, so it's fun, yeah. So I arrived today in the morning, then practice in Dubai, and then in the evening fly to Philippines.
That's a very good place to have friends in as well, and a nice layover, it sounds. So that's the last Challenger event this year, right?
Yes, it's the last tournament of the year, the last tournament of all. So it was the last elite in this week in Joao Pessoa. So it'll be next week is in Philippines Challenger. And then I think World Tour final in Doha.
Yeah, right. Is that the same at the same time? I think so, right?
No, it's a week after.
Oh, week after.
So, yeah, finals for Challenger is on 3rd and World Tour finals? Oh, maybe. No, I'm not sure, actually. You should know better.
I think it's at the same time. But, yeah.
At the same time. Because the next week we play King of the Court after... No, I think World Tour Finals is on 10th.
Yeah.
So a week after the Philippines, it's World Tour Finals. And then another week is King of the Court Finals in Doha, the same location in the Spire Zone where World Tour Finals will be.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. But I guess you didn't qualify this year for the finals.
Unfortunately not. Only 10 teams and we are not between them.
Yeah, and just for the record, it's called Pro Tour Finals now. I make the same mistake as well, but it's not the World Tour anymore.
Yeah. But don't say it anymore. Right now. It's not the World Tour Finals. Yeah, we will see next year what's going to happen.
We will. And you go to Philippines and you are playing with your brother?
Yes. So Smedin's retired and we announced that we are not going to play together. After Latvian Championship, and then we played our last international tournament, King of Court Royal Championship in Rotterdam in September. And after it, I partnered with my brother. We played first tournament we played in Bibione, Beach Volley Marathon. If you maybe know, it's a legendary tournament where like mostly for amateurs, and it was crazy, like 800 teams. We played 15 games in 2 days. So it was our like first tournament together. And then we played Futures in Mallorca, end of October. We got silver. So it was best result of my brother and his career. And then we went straight from Mallorca. We went to China. We played Challenger in China. We made it to the main draw, and then we won in the pool one match, and we got in the top 10. It was another best result of my brother. So we are just building a new team. You have this Sam Square, you know, we had before Sam Smee,
yeah,
Sam Alos Medins. Now we have Sam Square. So like German will understand, like pony wash,
yeah.
Like
we got the same
quadrat. So it will be Sam Alos Quadrat.
Yeah. Very good. And what's the plan with your brother? Are you like really teamed up for upcoming seasons, or are you just pulling him onto the pro tour?
No, like as always in my career, if I pick a partner, in my career I played only with three partners. I played 6 years with Plavins, then I played 4 years with Sorokins. With Plavins, I played 6 years. We made it to Beijing. With Sorokins, I played 4 years. We made it to London Olympics, and then with Smedins, I played 11 years. We wow. played in Rio. We were a little bit just one game away from Tokyo. And now I partner with my brother with a goal to try to make it to Paris. For sure, we can't make it through the world ranking, but still there is Continental Cup. And we have now pretty good two teams from Latvia that can play for Continental Cup, represent Latvia. And we will push maximum. We will prepare in this winter just to get ready for Continental Cup.
Oh, wow. And your partner is, like, your brother, he's a blocker, right?
He's not a blocker. He used to play as a blocker with his last partner, with Plavins, but they actually didn't play, like, normal because first training camp, Plavins got injured with his knee, and then 1.5 years he was struggled. He was recovering from knee surgery, pretty serious one. And that's why. But before, my brother played with two previous partners. He was playing defense, and on the underage, he was blocking because he's tall. He's 202, but he's not really good at blocking. He's much better in defense. But you know, when you're 202, then most of the coaches want to put you play blocking, and and that's why. But actually, it's very comfortable with my brother because. First of all, we grew up together. We had the same school, the same understanding of the game. And he's left-handed, the same as Smedins. He can jump set. He can play combination volleyball. He can attack on two. He can jump serve. So, and we are both split blocking. So actually, I have the same. It's very, very comfortable for me. I don't need to adapt a lot because it's actually the same position. I just got upgraded. I get a partner who is 12 centimeters taller and 10 years younger.
Than Smedins? Or than you?
Than Smedins, yeah. A little bit less experienced, but hopefully we can improve it. That's why we try to play all tournaments this year, just to get more understanding what we need to work on in the off-season. And then 6 months in off-season, just go and work hard, prepare, go to training camps and sparrings with other teams just to get ready for the next season.
And you've been like split blocking with Smedins too, right? For the 11 years you played together. It's not many teams that do this on the pro tour. There never have been many teams. And especially like from Germany, there's never been any team that doesn't have a big blocker and a small fast defender. What's the like how
but now you do have
yeah, like with
two defenders with Winter, right? Fechner, and they're doing well, so maybe it was a good idea.
But we're not sure like if they do it just because they want to play right now. Probably the coaches don't want them going to LA like this. They want to put them back with blockers, probably. But you never did that, but you split block.
They're out of German system.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That doesn't work here. But what's the advantages of maybe playing with two blockers and two defenders?
Main advantage is you save energy. Because, I mean, like when it's hot, you probably see the big blockers that get a lot of pressure. And that's how me and Smedins, we have won a lot of games, especially when it's hot weather. We play against big blockers and we just serve them short serves, short at the back, short at the back, makes them run. And then every time after they serve, they run to the net. We play fast balls, we play jump sets, attack on two. It makes opponent blocker run even faster after the serve. And if you make him every serve run sprint to the net, and then you move him down the net, and you serve him every second ball, every single ball, and make them move even with the reception, with the short and at the back, we won a lot of games. Just make a blocker tired, and just tactically. And so I think this is the main advantage, that you save energy, especially now teams, you can now see even me and Smenis were the first one who started the jump sets and combination volleyball, attack on two, and then the Polish teams, Kantor Losek, join us, and now Swedish put it to another level. Yeah. Like every single ball they try to jump set, and they do it with a side set. And with this style, you can see like more and more teams start to do jump set with fakes, attack on two. And if you split block, you're already there with big blockers. Every time blocker serves, it's a big advantage for teams to attack without the block.
Yeah.
So this is the main advantage. And the second advantage that was also very good with me and Smedins, that if you aggressive server, it gives you advantage that you can focus on the serve. You don't need to run after the serve. I know it's Evandro. He struggles a lot. He was much better server when he played with André and with Pedro, because they split blocking. So after the serve, he can stay in defense. That's why he was much more aggressive in the serve rather than he is now when he's serving and running for a block. So he makes more mistakes because like after the serves, he already continues the movement. And this is a big advantage for split blockers, that they can focus more on the serve.
And were you like the first ones, or were there different teams when you started that did this split blocking on the tour? Or did you do something new there as well? Because I don't remember for sure.
As of a few, Herrera was always split blocking. And when we started to play, Herrera played with Mesa. So they were split blocking. There was a bunch of teams who were split blocking. And we weren't the only one. But at the beginning, when I started to play, I was playing with Plavin. So I was a full-time blocker. And then I partnered with Sorokins. And yeah, there was just a few teams, but not many.
Yeah. And
but, you know, it's like you split blocking when you don't have really good blockers. That's why you split blocking.
Are there no good blockers in Latvia? Never? Except for you?
Like in I'm not a good blocker. I'm not even close. I played 20 years almost, and there was never a guy taller than 202. In Latvia, so 202 was the tallest one. We had Solovays and then my brother. And so these are the tallest players in Latvia we had. So all the tall guys, because basketball is so strong in Latvia that all tall guys go to basketball. We have three or four guys playing NBA. And it's a good motivation for such a small country that and huge competition. That when you have a big guy in the school, coaches from basketball just come and grab them, and we're suffering, so we need to be more competitive.
Yeah, did you ever try to
basketball?
Did you ever try to or your federation? Because in Germany they did this once, that they had a like a clinic or a workshop or something to get tall people from other sports to convert to volleyball.
Yeah, but I think it's not my job. I do my job, and I think I do it pretty well. So I think there's other people who should do their jobs. And I think it's school and all this volleyball, underage classes, coaches, school directors, federation. I think it's their job to convince new people. I bring new people in the sport by motivating them with by my results, and I think I can't be everywhere. Maybe when I retire, I can switch. But
is that currently not. Is that an option for you to stay in the sport when you don't play anymore?
Oh, for sure, I will stay. I love beach volleyball, even after 20 years professional careers, 19 full seasons. So next season will be my 20th season
Wow.
on a world tour. and Pro Tour. And I dedicated more than half of my life to this sport, and for sure I would like to stay in this sport because I know everything about the sport. I know from professional athlete, from coaching, from organizational part, because I was one of the persons who bring also a world tour to my hometown, to Jurmala. We were like three people who had this idea to create a world tour in Jurmala, and we started it. Also, I'm organizing camps. I'm organizing beach box camps all around the world. Last month we had in Mallorca with 650 people from 35 different countries. And yeah, so it's pretty big. So I know also how to organize beach volleyball events, how to organize beach volleyball tournaments. And I've been in the program of beach volleyball for many, many years. I grew up from underage till Olympics, and I've been on different levels of beach volleyball. So I know a lot about the sport. So for sure, it will be very stupid to just ruin this knowledge and not to stay and not to help our sport grow. But we will see.
Yeah.
Right now, I see myself still on volleyball court as a professional athlete.
Yeah, at least until the next Olympics, and then we'll see. What do you have plans for after?
Yeah, we will see. No, right now, I'm just focusing on my first plan. Then we will see.
That makes sense. Yeah, yeah. With beach box camps, I always wondered because I can't speak Latvian, of course. How far into it or are you? Are what is your role? Because I see you're probably the head coach, but I don't grasp how much work it is you do there. Really,
I mean, like it's my project. We are two people who own this project.
All right,
so,
yeah,
so. I'm. We are two partners. Renner is my partner. He is more responsible on of business part. I'm more responsible on sport part, and for sure we do everything. Us two, we organize starting from social media till contacts with municipality, with all our students and coaches, and yeah, that's how it is.
And you still like you coach as well in your camps.
Not in a big camp. In Mallorca, I just have no chance because it's too much organized that stuff. But in the smaller camps, I do coach. And because I do also educational reels in my Instagram. And so I have a lot of experience, and I try to share it also with my students, with my participants. And our next camp will be in Vietnam in New Year Eve. So all your followers are very welcome because probably your people like beach, your followers like beach volleyball. So we do New Year camp in Vietnam. We have pretty a lot of people from Germany, in Mallorca as well. And last year we did New Year in Bali. And yeah, so we travel around the world. This May we did in Punta Cana. Probably next spring we will do in Miami. We will try to do it at the same time with King of a Court, Miami tournament. So we will see, still waiting confirmation from them.
That sounds pretty good. Yeah, sure. I will put the link in the show notes as well to for the people to see. And it's also many of the European or especially the German camp organizations, they don't go that far. They don't go to Miami or Vietnam. They stay in Europe usually. So that's a good upside.
Yeah, but it's like also Valkenhorst. Alex asked me, like, because we're in a good, very good relationship with him. He was many years. He was coming with Winchef to our camp in Egypt, and then he went 2 years. He was also came with Sven Winter to our camp in Egypt. And that were like in very good relationship, and he asked like, why you go this all this exotic destination? I said like, because I like to travel. I like to see this destination. So probably all my students, they would like to see this destination as well. There's a lot of people that also they're pretty conservative, that don't go to see new places, and they know because we are the brand Beachbox, and they know that we're gonna organize everything. So we put a lot of work, investigate the locations all around the world. And when we do the camp, so probably it's gonna be good hotel, good environment, entertainment program, community of beach volleyball people from different countries, because it's a very international camp. We do it in English. And as I mentioned, in Mallorca, we had this year participants from 35 countries. So in smaller camps, it's less, but still it's like 20 countries at least. And smaller camps, they are more cozy. So you spend time all together. And this year, and we also like, what is the concept also of my camps? Like all the coaches of in my camps, they're World Tour players, World Tour medalists, Olympians, and coaches of World Tour players and Olympians. So this is the concept. And this year we will have, in Vietnam, we will have Luini from Netherlands, European vice, this year European vice champion as a coach. And also we have national team player Judah Garcia from Philippines, like closer, but he's number one team from Philippines. And it's also like we always bring top players, Boerman, Stefan Boerman, he was a coach in Mallorca, Alvaro Filho, Olympian from Tokyo. He was Brazilian. He was also a coach in Mallorca. So we bring a lot of top players as the coaches. It's also for our participants also a chance to get to know players, because most of the time they say, oh, I saw him only on the screen and a competition. He felt so arrogant, but actually he's so nice. He's so, such a good person. So yeah, that's the way.
Yeah, that's very nice. That's not many camps that that have the chance to do that. That's like your unique chance, because you're a player, to have all these people and to get to them. But like, how do you have time for all of this? It sounds like you have a 30-hour day.
I sleep only 6 hours a day. So no, but actually, like, I was pretty active all my life. I was always studying. I was going different classes. I was always doing two sports at the same time. I played 10 years basketball. So I finished basketball school. And then I switched to beach volleyball. In wintertime, I was playing basketball. In summer, I was playing beach volleyball. So I'm not a traditional volleyball player who usually play indoor and then switch to beach. I was playing basketball and then I switched to beach volleyball. So I was doing two sports for my first 5 years of beach volleyball career. I was playing beach volleyball only in summer and basketball during school in the winter. And my parents, my grandmother is a mathematics teacher. She used to be a mathematics teacher in school. So education, my parents, they're studying very well. So education for us was always the priority. Even my father was a coach. My mom always said, okay, studies primary and then sport. And actually, it's a destiny how I become a professional athlete, because I was planning to go study medicine. In the last year in school, I was going every year, every day, 4 hours to medical school, to like preschool, pre-university preparation and classes, like four times a week, 4 hours. So 16 hours every week preparing for to get in the university. And then after I finished my school, I passed exams and I got a scholarship. And my mom called me, and I went to my first under 20 European championship. My mom called and said, like, oh, I'm so happy you got a scholarship to this medical school. Like, it's most prestigious in Latvia. And I said, like, what are we going to do? And I said, okay, mom, if we win under 20, then we will be in the Olympic programs. They put only the winners of underage. They put an Olympic program. You get some funds from Olympic team support. And I said, okay, I'm going to try 1 year to play professionally. And we went there, we won, we beat Umen Kaczmarek, yeah, in the German team in the final. And it was a long time ago. And that's how I tried one year to play professionally. So I didn't go to medical school. And then next year we won under 21 world championship with Florence. So they got extended for one more year. Then next year we won under 23, we were extended for one more year, and then we qualified to Beijing. And that's how I didn't become a doctor. I become a professional athlete. So it's kind of destiny, I think.
And did you then do no studies at all? No other degree, and just focus on sport completely?
I have four highest educations. I have then I switch. Yeah,
perfect.
I had a degree in banking systems. I have master's degree in finance. I have degree in law, and this year I finish sport management and volleyball head coach, beach volleyball head coach.
Like, again, how do we have time for all this? But yeah, you told me before, just don't sleep.
I mean, like, it's all about planning, right? You have 7 days a week, you have 24 hours a day, and it's all about planning. So you plan, okay, so 4 hours I spent being as a professional athlete practicing, then like 1 hour I spend on social media, 2 hours I spend on studies, and 1 hour I spend on working in the office for the camps. And then like 4 hours you spend with your family, with your kids. And it's all about planning.
Sounds easy.
And then you do. Sounds easy, yeah. But not easy to plan, but sometimes it's really hard to stick with your plan, especially with when you're tired and you just want to stay on the sofa in social media scrolling. But yeah, it's all about planning.
Yeah, but for sure, you do these degrees with online university somehow?
No. Like, really? First three, I was present.
Oh, wow.
But the good thing was my father is my coach. So he's interested always. He was always interested in that I get a degree. So all my studies were, all my training camps were organized the way that I can finish all my exams. And the good thing is that university was always very helpful. So they always allow me. So winter session in January, I was passing from September till January. I was studying in university. My trainings were always according to my studies. So if I have school till 4, so probably practice will be at 5 till 7. And then in the morning, I go to the gym before my classes. And so it was very easy because to organize, because my father is a head coach, so I can agree with him. Okay, so let's put a schedule. And then my partner was just adapting. And and university was always helpful. They said, okay, so you do winter session together with all the class, but summer session I was doing not in May. I was doing in September when my season was over. Before, like previous years, like most of the time, season was over in September. Now, in last 5 years, they extended it, so it's never ending season. Before, it was like September was over, and then next and tournament started maybe in February, March, it was Asia. Now they extended with but it's happened only in the last 5 years when they start to do tournaments in November, in December, in October, and it's never ending season. Like last year, last tournament of a season ended, and next week first tournament of new season started. So it was pretty fun, and not fun for professional athletes because you have no time to rest, no time to fix all your injuries and to start preparation for a new season.
Yeah, I think now you have to regulate yourself and build your own season, right? You have to not play the tournaments at the end or the beginning.
Yeah, now players skip tournaments just to get ready for a new season.
Yeah, sure. But now I didn't look into the tournaments that are right now. Last year it was the late tournaments that were not so packed with very good teams. Is it the same right now?
Same. A little bit different because it's Olympic qualification already. That's why a lot of teams take it more seriously, especially teams who are fighting for a country spot. So you're probably gonna expect teams who are fighting for a country spot, Netherlands, Australia, USA, Brazil. So all these teams probably they will use a chance end of the season when it's not that strong to go and get some points. And also teams who are very close to the elite but are out of elite. Yeah. So they will try to go to this tournament and play.
Yeah, but good for you, I guess, if it's not that packed to play these ones now. Do you like... You did this for 19 years, 20 years maybe. Do you still do the same amount of training, the same ways of training that you did for the last few years? Or does it change with getting older? Do you have to do less training or more training maybe?
No, for sure I do different. I don't do more, but I try to do it more clever. I guess I'm when you're young, you just go. You are first in the beach, last who leaves the beach. You're just doing a crazy amount of work. And now, like I understand, I get tired faster, so I need to. We have another visitor. And no, now for sure I practice less, but I focus more on strength and condition, because if I'm healthy, I can play on the highest level. So it's a priority now to keep, to stay healthy, to work on all my parts where I have micro injuries, and to make this like shoulder, back, knees, like standard for volleyball players, to keep, to strengthen all these weakest parts of our bodies, so I can just keep on going and play without pain, without injuries. And if I am physically strong, then I can play on a high level.
And how does this work with your much younger brother, who probably needs a very different kind of training?
He needs a lot of physical work, so now it's very good. So I think it's actually physical. If he gets stronger physically, it's the area where he can improve the most, because he grew up at the beach. When he was a kid, we have 13 years difference. So I was 16 when I started to play, like practice seriously, and he was 3. I remember that we were coming to the beach. My father was bringing tent, so he was putting tent, small tent at the beach, and my brother was sleeping his day nap at the beach.
Yeah.
And so people are playing, bouncing the ball, and he's like 3 years old, crawling out of the tent. Okay, what's going on? Everybody's playing. Okay, all good. Everybody's screaming, hitting the ball. He don't care. He sleeps well. And so he grew up with the ball, and that's why he can improve a lot of volleyball and tactical things, but strength and condition is the most where he can improve.
Well, that's lucky that works for you. You say beach all the time. Do you always do you practice on the beach?
Yeah, always.
Very good.
I practice at the beach in Jurmala, and in wintertime, yeah. Now it's half meter snow, -8 in Latvia.
Yeah,
after the Beijing Olympics in 2008, in Latvia was first indoor facility built. And now after London bronze medal match, another 2. And now we have 5 indoor facilities with almost 30 courts. With in Riga, we have less than 1 million people. So in a city with less than 1 million people, we have 5 indoor facilities with 29 courts, and 3 indoor facilities. There is schools for kids with like from 80 till 140 kids in school. So we have a lot of kids that are playing beach volleyball on a daily basis, like all year round. So it's not like before, people coming from beach, from indoor, they were playing beach volleyball in summer. So now we have kids that are 360 days a year. They have, even now indoor, we play Latvian championship indoors for beach volleyball. Yesterday I wanted to go practice in a place where I practice in beach box, and the owner said, no, sorry, you can't come today because we have Latvian kids championship in beach volleyball. So they have a championship on Saturday, Sunday, all year round they play. So it's really good. So we practice in wintertime, we practice in these indoor facilities.
I was in Australia last year at the end of the year, like pretty much 1 year ago. And the men's team, they train in Adelaide, right? And it's right on the coast. It has a big beach as well. And they always train at their facility that's like a kilometer from the beach, because they can control the environment a little better. Could you imagine doing that?
I can't imagine this. We went in training camp in February in Hermosa, and one day it was raining. And the guys, all the locals guys said, okay, let's go to indoor facility and pay $150 for 2 hour practice and just play. I said, like, we flew all from Europe here on the Atlantic not to practice again in indoor facilities. Like, just a little rain, it's still warm, just let's practice outside. Okay, you rain when it's raining during competition, you always play. So what do you mean, like, if it's a little rain, you don't practice? So it was fun, yes, to hear this from them.
Yeah, we Germans usually also tend to not train at the beach for some reason, although we have a lot of beach.
But you don't have a lot of beaches.
We do.
In the cities.
In the cities now, yeah, right.
Most of the players come from.
Yeah, but they move anyways, so they don't train where they come from. Usually they have to go to some kind of central place, which is now in Hamburg, which doesn't have beach. But you could put it there where the beach is, but they don't. So they fly somewhere else to train at the beach. We've seen, like you told us a lot about them as well. We've seen a lot of Latvian very good beach volleyball players. You still have a very good women's team. You have a lot of Olympics with you there. How come that beach volleyball works in Latvia like that? It's a small country.
Thanks to my father. So actually, my father was he's like a real fanatic of beach volleyball. He can play volleyball all day, like 24/7, talk about beach volleyball, and he's the guy who made beach volleyball in our country. He was the first one. He was the first Latvian champion back in 90s. He 7 years he won Latvian championship. He was a guy who was bringing indoor players to the beach to play beach volleyball and to play Latvian championship in beach volleyball. And then when me and Plavins, we partners, we were both 18 years old, and he said, we, like, in 1 year they're going to be at Athens, we can't make it, but in 5 years to Beijing we should go. I said, okay, but for us was, if you can imagine, they said, like, we should go to Olympics, but before our best male team couldn't even reach main draw. They played 17 tournaments, and in 17 tournaments they never qualified to the main draw. So that was the level. And then my father comes and says, we need to go to Olympics. And Plavins was playing indoor as a libero. And so he came to his, they were Latvian champions, so strongest Latvian team indoor. And he came to the practice, and in changing room, he said, Samoilov Senior said that we need to qualify to Beijing. And said, like, and all the team started to laugh, because nobody believes this is possible. And then in 5 years, we were the youngest team in beach volleyball history who qualified to Olympics. We are both 23 years old. And then nobody laughed, especially after first match when we beat USA, who was number one seeded. And so he believed in us. And actually, my father worked in his career as a coach. He worked with five teams, with five different teams, and all five teams made it to Olympics. So he coached me and Plavins. He coached me and Sorokins. He coached me and Smedins. We all three teams made it to Olympics. He coached Kravchenko, Graudina, now Graudina Samoilova, because Anastasia married my brother. And then he coached Plavins with Stocks for Tokyo, and they made it to Olympics. So all five teams he coached, they made it to Olympics. So That's the reason.
That's
why beach volleyball is so strong.
Your father is the reason. Yeah, that's crazy. It's and in some countries, beach volleyball is still so young that there's, like, in Norway as well, that the dads of big players kind of founded it in their country and brought it there and made it big. So we're still in that generation. It's not we have a young sport. It's wow. Did you have, like, this Olympics or all three of them, were they close that you qualified, or was it like, okay, we're safe, or did you have, like, some final tournaments where you clinched it at the last moment?
So all of them were last moment, because it's happened because of the injuries of my partners. And for 2008 in Beijing, Plavins dislocated his shoulder. So he made a surgery. We missed the beginning of the season. Plus, it was just the beginning of our careers. So we jumped in the last spot. We took the last spot till the last tournaments, like last two tournaments of qualification tournaments. We were still playing, and there was five teams and only two would go to Olympics. And we were between these two teams who qualified out of five, and three was out. Then from London, I played with Sorokin. We were pretty safe. We had good results. We are regularly played in quarterfinals in the Grand Slams. And then my partner got injured with his back. He made the surgery with his back. So also we struggled a little bit half a season. We wasn't sure. We had really bad results because of his injury. He was recovering and also was kind of, but we were pretty safe, but still was like at the beginning of a season of Olympic year, it wasn't like in the winter we are preparing for Olympics. Still, we were like at 2012 in winter, we were preparing for qualification. And then in Rio, we saw like, okay, we were in 2013, 2015, we were number one in the world ranking with Smedins. And then he got the injury meniscus and in the middle of a season, and we had to make the surgery and we missed world championship. That was usually in Olympic qualification, we have one world championship that counts for ranking, and we missed world championship plus we missed two Grand Slams. So it was pretty big, but still we qualify pretty easy, but we didn't make it to the top six. We didn't made it to the top six, so we weren't in the first draw. We still had, we were in the second draw. And in Tokyo, we missed one game, 60 points. Like in the whole season, one extra game, one more quarterfinal or medal, and we missed one spot. And we had the last two tournaments we played, we lost to Poland, and then we lost to Italy. And if we win, we go to Olympics. So it was pretty emotional moments in my career.
I can imagine. Wow. But yeah, it can't always work with a last minute one. It had to happen one time that it doesn't work.
This is what all sport about. Sport is about emotion. And if you have positive, negative emotion, it's emotion. And that's what make you feel alive. So that's why we are doing sport, to get emotion.
Oh, that's very well said. Like you said earlier that you guys pretty much started jump setting, playing the ball on two and playing fastballs outside and stuff like that. Now, pretty much, it starts. Everyone starts doing it, and Partain Benish and the Swedes have put it on another level. Pretty much, the Swedes with the jump setting, Partain Benish with the over and two. Why did it not stick when you guys started it? Why didn't anyone copy, or like not so many teams copy you guys?
Because it was very strict, the rule for setting.
All right, yeah.
Any minimum rotation was considered as a double touch. Now they're not that strict because they want to make it more like indoor. So set a more faster release. And that's why they kind of close eyes when it rotates a little bit. We had advantage. We had winter when our coaches, Smedin's father and my father, when they partnered together. And our father said, okay, so before we were only bump setting. So Plavins and Smedin's, they won bronze medal in London with bump setting. And it's weird, but also Emmanuel, who was an Olympic champion, and in London he was second. He was also bump setting. So there are still really good players like we see now. Sorum is a bump setting and playing on the highest level. And then when we partner, my father said, okay, so we need to, first of all, we need to learn good quality setting. So every practice, hundreds and hundreds repetition for setting. We were doing with heavy ball for setters, 100 times heavy ball, 100 times regular ball, 100 times heavy ball, 100 times regular, and every practice. So you go and you know, oh, again, I'm going to be setting. And when we, like after 1 month, we start to feel that our set is perfect. We start to do some combinations, set behind, set fast, outside. And then we made perfect set with setting with combination. Then my father said, okay, let's try to do jump set. And we started to do jump sets, and it started work also better. At the beginning, it was really tough, but then better and better. And then the idea of our structure was that every time you hit without a block. So if you have a perfect pass, then you attack on two without a block. Or if blocker jump on you on the second touch, you do jump set and you set ball outside and then attacker attack without a block. So the perfect condition, every attack, you attack without a block. It's easy to tell, hard to do. Because people from the other side, they're serving very aggressive. Blockers on the other side, they're very tall, they're very athletic, they move fast, they have long arms. And and that was hard to do. And people who try to do it just straight, go and set, jump set, they had a lot of mistakes. Yeah. So, and if you, the value of 1 point is so big that if you miss one set, you referee call you double set, double touch, you don't want to lose this point. So everyone was just more confident. But when more and more teams start to do it and they start to have more good results, then they say, okay, so other teams also start to do this, try. And the main thing is you need to practice it. It's not like you do it first time in a competition. Maybe it can work once. But in this case, probably your partner won't be ready for this if you do it for the first time. So these are things that you do thousands of times during the training camps, and then you can start do it in competition.
Do you think that now the game will change to that, like in total, that it's just becomes a basic component to do this?
It's game speed ups, but it depends. If for sure, like smaller teams, like smaller players, they have no other chance to beat top teams rather than playing combination volleyball. You can beat Mol if you are not making him move. Just playing up and down, he will just destroy you because he's an unbelievable blocker. The only way how you can beat it, him, and that's what Swedish and Benesh Patrain showed, is that the only way you can beat them if you make Mol move down the net. If you attack on second balls, you make jump set, then he's not in a stable position, squat and jump and just control everything over the net. Then when you make him move and he's out of balance, this is the only way how you can beat guys like Mo. And so I see for smaller players, this is the best way to play. But for big players, I can't imagine Ehlers making jump set to Winkler and or Evandro is faking attacking on two and then next ball he's faking and then making jump set to outside. It's kind of not so going in my head, but yeah. And doesn't make sense. If a guy can hit the ball on top of antenna, why he should run outside and then hit fastball under arms? It doesn't make sense. No.
But when did you start with that? Did you play a few seasons with
2013?
13.
We partnered with Smedins after London Olympics. And then all the winter in between 2012 to 2013, we spent 4 months in Egypt. And 4 months we were working on a set.
Wow.
Set at second two. And then first year we played with Smedins. Before, he had one medal on the World Tour. I had one medal on World Tour. And when we partnered, in first year we got 8 medals and we become number one in world ranking. So this style works. So we surprised the World Tour with this game. We came and everybody was like, what are they doing? So for sure, the next year everyone was prepared and they scout us, they analyze. So we need to do something better and more, think some other things, what we can improve, what we can do better. But
so you did.
First year was worked really good.
Yeah, but you did play some seasons with up and down volleyball. That worked as well, didn't it? You got to Olympics.
Yeah, I mean, like when you play up and down volleyball, usually you play up and down volleyball when you struggle with passing.
Yeah.
If your passing is really good, then you shouldn't play up and down. You should give on two. There were games when I was attacking. I got every serve on me, but I attack maybe one out of three. So it was very funny that Smedins got the best attacker of the season, even that he got served maybe 5% of the serves. And he got best attack because he was all the time attacking on two, because I was always giving him, why should I attack with a block if he can attack on two with a flying block or without a block? So it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. But you had to have really good passing then for that to work.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Zitor, I work a lot about. And then when I become a little bit slower, when I can't move so fast, and because the quality of the passing, it's people think, especially amateurs and beginners, that it's all about hands, but actually it's all about legs. Hands, just a platform. If you move very good with the legs, you will be a very good passer. If you, doesn't matter what you do with your hands, the most important thing is how you move with your legs.
Oh, there's some free coaching on the episode. Very good. Very, very different topic, but a big question. You have a very prominent nickname, which is the Lion King. When did that come up and who came up with it?
There was American announcer, Geeter. He's announcer also for Lakers now. And he was a legendary announcer for AVP. And he's the guy who gives all these nicknames to American players, like Sean Rosenthal, Superman, Dalhauser, Thin Beast, and all the others. And he was announcer in Beijing. And when the first time I played first match, opening we play against USA, and he just called, and now team from Latvia, Alexander, the Lion King, Samoilos, and I'm like, Lion King? Okay. So I started, in 2008, I started to have a little bit longer hair. Plus, when I play, I'm pretty emotional, so I like scream after I win the point. Like they call it roaring, like a lion. And after, and we, this was first match. It was Sunday. Saturday was Olympic opening ceremony. So Sunday was the first match of any Latvian athlete competing. So we were the first one from all Latvian team. So, and it was Sunday evening. So everyone in Latvia watched it. So first day of Olympics, first Latvian athletes competing. So in Latvia, everyone is watching. And we play, we are last seeded. We play number one seeded USA. And we beat them 2-0. And media went crazy. So, and they grabbed this Lion King. And there was, we had biggest sport magazine. They put it on the first page on Monday. They put it, my picture when I'm screaming. Write the text, Lion King roaring in Beijing. So media started, so they like it, this Lion King, they started to use this Lion King, Lion King, Lion King. And then also on tour, because my last name is pretty hard to pronounce, Samoilos, for foreigners, especially for female, because men, we play with each other, so we more often we see each other names and we hear each other names on the stadiums. But women, they're following, we're traveling together, but still they're not really good in the names of men. So sometimes girls, they want to like speak to me and they don't know how to pronounce my last name correctly and they don't know my first name. And so they were like, players started to call me Lion King because it was easier for them to remember. And so a lot of players on tour started to call me Lion King because it was easier to remember for them. And then how somehow automatically it went that people started to call me Lion King. And then I made it a signature move when I run out of the court. I roar and I make it like, ah. And then the fans really like it. They roar back. And when they ask pictures after the game, they said, like, so we make a picture. And I said, like, can we do a lion roar? So, yeah, let's do this. And so we started to do it. And then it became kind of a signature move. And now this brand, Lion King, I also have a logo of a lion in my beach box camps. Main logo is also a lion. And everybody knows me as a Lion King. And that's why now I'm stuck with my mane, how they call it, my long hair. Even sometimes it's really hard with sun and sand all the time in my hair. So very often I just want to go and cut my hair. But from the marketing side, I understand, like, I can't just go and have a haircut like you do. So it's like I'm kind of stuck to this image until I'm a professional athlete.
Yeah, you have to keep it. That's good. That's a very good story. But do you even like the movie?
For sure. When I was a kid, I think it was one of the rare moments when I saw almost cry when Mufasa died.
Yeah, Yeah, so that would be very funny otherwise if you'd like, oh no, I hate the movie or I've never seen it, but that works. The whole story works out very good.
No, I watch it. I watch it.
You talk about marketing side and stuff like that. You also have, I think, one of the biggest social media Instagram accounts in the beach volleyball world. Like it's up top.
Yeah, so make sure you follow me. if you're not following me, follow me at SummerLoves or just write hashtag Mr. Lion King.
And you will find him. Yeah, but when did you start doing social media? And you also told us that you would spend 1 hour a day working on social media stuff maybe. When did you figure out that was maybe
so
important?
So I was... I was always doing social media, and when I just first appeared, and first of all, it was Facebook, then it was Twitter, but on Twitter I was very short period of time, and then Instagram appeared, and then I was never really good in text. I was always much better with picture, and when Instagram appeared, so I was always posting, but it was kind of showing my pass, my competition, my results. And then when Instagram became very popular, I realized that nobody cares anymore about, okay, they care your result, but they can see it in the FIVB webpage. And so just see the results, it's easier for them, and that's all. And so I said, like, okay, what kind of content I can make that is brings value to my followers, and I'm not, so I said, okay, I was like my already more than 30 years old, so I said, like, I'm not a guy who's like 32 years old will do TikToks now and some funny videos dancing and trends. So I said, okay, I keep this to the young guys, 18, 20, 22 years, so it's like more organic for them. So like I think it will be more naturally, it's because now in what is interesting content on social media, it's rather entertaining or educational. So you get to know something new or you get entertained. So I'm not a guy who can make, I can post sometimes entertaining videos from my games, like some funny moments, but that's what Volleyball World doing now. And so I said, okay, I will focus on educational. And I started to do educational reels about beach volleyball, and it went viral. It went really good. I wasn't even expecting it's going to be so big. And I was the first one who started to do these educational videos in beach volleyball. Yeah. And they become very popular. People were sharing. And then in one moment, I was just realizing that people... they come to this, we go to the competition and or travel around the world, and people just regular at the beach. I can be like in Hermosa playing with the guys, and they come, oh, you're this guy who make educational reels. They're not coming to me as a Olympian and a world tour champion or European champion. They come to me as you as a guy who makes these educational videos of beach volleyball. And then that moment I realized, probably my Instagram is pretty big. If people associate me with educational reels, not with my professional career.
Yeah. And when you film them, you sometimes use your training partners. Do they always like to do that? I see sometimes Giannis or your brother or someone. Is that fun for them?
Yeah, for sure. I never did it professionally. So a lot of people ask me like, oh, let's, and also you can imagine how many messages from influencers I get receive, or from people who are filmers and say, okay, we will bring you to another level. We will bring you new followers, better engagement. And I don't need this. I want it naturally. I have a context. So it's not natural. If my quality of my video is not that perfect, I film them on my iPhone. And if they're not perfect, but people see that I do it myself, that it's not TV crews that organize everything, and then in one moment it becomes so professional that it just loses its heart. It's so I try to do it naturally and explain maybe, okay, sometimes it's not that professional, edited, and texts are not so good positioning, but I'm also learning and I'm doing this. But and for sure I need people who can help me. I use tripod a lot, but to film my videos, but like beach volleyball, some elements I can't just explain myself, and it's hard sometimes to to ask, especially after practice. And Yanis, he was always, "Ah, oh, video again." But Yanis understands that thanks to my Instagram account, we keep a lot of sponsors, especially in the COVID time. We kept most of our sponsors only because of my Instagram account. I was very lucky that I started to do it just before COVID. So I grew a lot from 10,000 to 50,000 just before COVID. And then all the sponsors, they were so happy with the numbers, with engagement, with the views. So they kept all our contracts, even we wasn't playing on the world tour. They kept all our contracts because of social media, and then Yanis just had no choice. Okay, I do 90% of the time, so can you just give five minutes of your time just to film, or just give me a few sets or put the block? Yeah. I didn't ask you a lot.
But it's sometimes you can see in Yanis' face that he just doesn't like to do it right now. But I know the situation.
Yanis' face has never changed. That's why Yanis had the nickname Terminator, because his face never changed. It doesn't matter. It's a first point of a practice, or it's a golden medal ball. His face never changed.
Very good. I actually only have one more question for you. Because it always has been a topic somewhere in the comments on Instagram or something, because people wonder about your approach, your steps with your approach. They wonder if you are goofy or something sometimes looks a little bit off. Can you finally explain that to us, what's happening with your approach, so we clear it up one more time?
So first thing is, because I came from basketball, so in the basketball you're always jump from, if you're right-handed, you jump from left leg. So my left leg was originally, after 10 years of basketball, was much stronger. That's why when I started to play beach volleyball, I felt stronger jump when I was finishing move with the left leg, not with right-left, but with left, I was putting pressure, main pressure, and then the right was just helping. But every time I was playing fastballs, because when you go with left, you jump more up. But every time I play fastballs, or I play from all my life I played from left side. But if after defense you attack from right side, then I do regular approach. So actually I can do both, and it just depends on situation. And Karch Karai, famous American volleyball player, the only player who got won Olympics indoor and beach. He did the same. He also had approach from, depending on the side he's attacking, he did left-right or right-left. So I'm actually not the unique one. There was players before as well. But yeah, I'm standard approach. I'm goofy foot. It came from basketball, just natural, because my leg was stronger. And that's why I was putting more on my left leg, because it was much stronger than the right.
Very good. Now we cleared it up for everyone, so no one has to ask again about that. Yeah. That's very interesting. So thank you very much for your time on a layover in Dubai, which is that never happened on this podcast before. So very nice. Thank you. On this podcast, it's always that the guest has the last word. So you may direct your words to the audience in a moment. And I say thank you guys for listening. Thank you for playing, and much luck in the Philippines. And see you guys next week.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, and my last words would be just keep on moving. Don't stay on one place. Just keep on moving. It doesn't only about sports, and for sure do sports, but also in all the rest of your careers. Just keep on moving. Try new things. Try to improve. And always try to be better than you are yesterday. So always keep on moving, and everyone is a champion. You just need to find the spot where you'll be a champion, and just keep on developing in this direction.
That's a very